Jose, good morning. I am sorry that I am unable to join you in person this morning for good reason. Baruch Hashem, I had to attend a bris in New York early this morning. So I'm not going to say Oseik b'mitzvah, pater min ha-mitzvah, because I'm not trying to pater myself. But there's a good reason why I can't be there with you in person. But Baruch Hashem, if we can't be together in person, at least we're together virtually. So today's daf is Mem 40, and we are picking up on Lamed Tes Amud Beis 39b, and we are picking up Mari Bar Isik. It's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, about 16 lines up from the bottom. So an interesting story over here. Mari Bar Isik asa le acho mi bechozoi. So Mari Bar Isik encountered his brother from Bechozoi. Now, okay, what's a little bit of background to this story? Look at Rashi. So Mari Bar Isik, so Rashi says, Asi le acho mi bechozoi, shalach aviv le bechozoi. So the father of Mari Bar Isik, I guess his father's name was Isik. So his father went to Bechozai. Bechozai was a place. Vinosa sham isha v'yoldo lo es ze. So again, so Mari Bar Isik's father remarried. And father Isik had a child, had a son with another woman. And what happened? Bechazer Mari Lakan. So apparently again, then Mari went away from Bechozai. And then sometime later on, after his father passed away, so Mari came back to Bechozai. And he took possession of his father's property in Bechozai, assuming that he was the surviving son. And now this brother that Mari Bar Isik had, came along sometime later on, claiming his portion of the estate. Now, to be clear, Mari was aware that he had a brother. He was aware of it, or sounds like he was aware of it. So this guy shows up. Amalei Plogli, and the brother says to Mari Bar Isik, give me my half. Amalei Lo Yedanalach. Mari basically says, listen, I don't know you, I don't recognize you. You're telling me that you're my brother, that you're my father's son, I don't recognize you. So they brought the case, they came before Rav Chista. So Rav Chista said to the brother, listen, Mari is saying good. He doesn't recognize you. That's a valid taina after all. Shneimar, Vayaker Yosef es Echa Vehem Lo Kiru. The pasuk says that Yosef remembered his brothers or recognized his brothers, and they did not recognize him. So remember again, this is by the dramatic encounter by the end of Bereishis, where Yosef, brothers didn't know what happened. And meanwhile, he became the viceroy. Brothers came before him to purchase food in Egypt. And the pasuk says Yosef recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. Now, leaving aside the deeper meaning of these psukim, simple pshat, remember again, they didn't recognize Yosef. Why? Because when Yosef was sold into servitude, he was a young man. Now, without a beard. Now, he was older. So the point that Rav Chista is making is, it's possible even for brothers not to recognize each other. And therefore, again, Mari Bar Isik has a right to say, listen, I met you many years ago, or maybe I never even met you at all. I'm not debating that I have a brother. I just don't recognize you. So therefore, again, Rav Chista said to the brother, bring witnesses that you are indeed Mari Bar Isik's brother, or that Isik is your father, and you'll be able to share in the estate. So the brother said, you know, I have witnesses. And the witness is coming to testify. The problem is they're scared. Why? Because Mari Bar Isik was a powerful guy. Now, Mari Bar Isik was an upstanding individual. But again, the point over here is that the testimony is going to take away property from him. So no one really wanted to, the witnesses really didn't want to testify about that. So the brother says, I have a problem. I have witnesses, but no one wants to come and testify on my behalf. So this is interesting. So Rav Chista flipped it, and he said to Mari Bar Isik, okay, you Mari Bar Isik, you bring witnesses that this guy is not your brother. Okay, which is interesting. Amrlei Dina Hachi. So Mari Bar Isik said to Rav Chista, really, is that the halacha? After all, motzi mechaver alav araya. And Rav Chista, come on, we both know that motzi mechaver alav araya, when you want to extract money from someone, the burden of proof is upon the extractor. In this case, this quote-unquote, this guy is claiming he's my brother. He wants to extract part of the estate. The burden of proof is on him, not on me. Amrlei Hachi Daini Aloch Ulechal Alimi Dechavroch. So Rav Chista said, you're right, but this is how he paskin for you and for all of your strong friends. In other words, I'll say there's this concept, we've actually seen this before, that sometimes when there's the potential for an intimidation factor, essentially we flip the testimonial responsibility. So whereas normally you're right, Motzi Mechaver Alav Araya, and therefore the brother has to bring witnesses that he is indeed Mari Bar Isik's brother. The challenge is, and in this case, we know people aren't going to want to testify against Mari Bar Isik. And what's interesting is, as much as it's not testifying against him, right? This is not like, but at the end of the day, the testimony will result in a loss of money to Mari Bar Isaac. No one's going to want to do that. So therefore, Rav Chisda said in a case like this, where essentially the case is a little bit lopsided, so we go ahead and we switch the burden of proof ultimately to the more powerful individual. So Mari Bar Isaac, you bring a proof that this guy's not your brother. Okay, Amalei Sof Sof. Asu Zahadi Velo Masadi. So Mari Bar Isaac said, look, you know what? If you think that people are so intimidated by me, so what does it matter? In other words, even if I bring witnesses, they're automatically going to testify to what I'm saying. So in other words, what does it matter? In other words, if Mari Bar Isaac is trying to say, if you think that I'm so intimidating, so then any witnesses that I'm gonna bring, of course, are going to testify to what I tell them to testify. So Amalei Tarti Lo Avdi. So Rav Chisda said, no. Intimidation does something interesting. What intimidation will do is it'll cause people not to testify, but intimidation won't cause witnesses to lie. So in other words, people might walk away and say, you know what, I don't want to testify in a case against Mari Bar Isaac, but it's not going to cause people to actually change their testimony. Lesof, asu sahadi da'achuahu. At the end of the day, witnesses came, whether the brother brought them or they just came of their own, testifying that indeed this guy was in fact Mari Bar Isaac's brother and therefore was entitled to part of the estate. Amarlay Lifloglu Nami Mi Pardisio Bustani the Shazel. So now that they're dividing up the estate, meanwhile Mari Bar Isaac had put in effort, had improved the orchards and the vineyards. So now the brother says, you have to split everything with me, including again the vineyards and the orchards that you worked hard on. In other words, I want to share in any appreciation that you have. So the Gemara says, Amrle Shapir Kamalacha. Rav Chisda once again said to Mari Bar Isaac, look, this brother, he's saying good, he's entitled to it. After all, this nan. Hiniach Banim Gidolim Ukutanim. If Ruvain died and he left behind older children and younger children, Veshbichu Gidolim Asanachas and Mishbichu Lemsa. Whatever appreciation, whatever improvements the older children did to the property, the younger children have a right to share in that appreciation, in that improvement. Top of men, 48. V'chin Amar Rabba Hishpichu La'emtza. Rabba also said that whatever improvements there are automatically split evenly amongst the estate. Amrli Abaye says, no, that's not a fair comparison. Mi dami, hasam gidolim gabi kitanim yodi v'kamachli. It's different. In that case where Reuven died and left behind, let's say adult children and minor children. So remember again, the adult children know of the existence of the younger children. And so they understand that whatever they're going to improve, the younger brothers are going to share in it and their mochel. In this case of here by Mari Bar Isaac never knew. He never knew about the existence ultimately of this younger brother. So the Gemara says, Igal gil milso motle kamid Rabbi Ami. So the whole thing escalated. The case came before Rabbi Ami. Amr lahu, gidola mizu amru. Shamin lahem ka'aris. So again, so now this comes full circle. So remember again, so Rabbi Ami said like this, we learned in yesterday's daf that in a case of where a relative goes and takes on maintenance of his relative's field, right? Remember again the Shavuy and the Netushin. So when he takes over the maintenance of the field, he gets paid like a sharecropper. Hashta didelo yavinale. So if you get paid for like a sharecropper for taking care of a field that's not your own, then alachas kama v'kama, you should get to share in the appreciation of a field that you are entitled to as an inheritor. Ahadrua ha l'kame drav chista. So they brought this back before Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda said, what's the comparison? Midami, hasam b'shos nachis, hachala b'shos nachis. In that case over there where the relative improves the field, he's doing so with the consent of Beis Din. Here, there was no Beis Din involved. In other words, now Rav Chisda is involved. But Mari Bar Isaac, when he took over this field, he was taking it over of his own volition. Beis Din wasn't involved in this. Va'od, furthermore, katanu. Oh. So furthermore, again, the brother in question, Mari Bar Isaac, this brother, was a katan. Was a minor. Ve'in moridin karov le'nichse katan. And in general, we don't bring a karov into the property of a katan. We saw this in yesterday's daf. We do not allow a relative to go ahead and maintain the field of a katan, lest he go ahead and inappropriately, you know, take possession of it. Adrula kamed Rabbi Ami, amar lehu lo saimua kamed the katan hu. And I said, you know what? You're right. No one told me the first of the story. I did not know in this particular case that this brother who was coming to Mari Bar Isaac was in fact a katan. Okay, beautiful. So we'll say that concludes that sugya. And again, remember, we come up with our three categories of different property: the Shavuyin, the Netushin, and the Retushin. We see the respective halachos that apply to all three. We see that if someone goes ahead and takes care of the property of someone else, they are paid like a sharecropper. Okay, good. And then we have this last case, ultimately, again, of Mari Bar Isik. We do see also in this case of Mari Bar Isik this interesting idea of like flipping the Shavua. That sometimes when there is a concern that one party is at a disadvantage, we could flip the Shavua to the other advantaged party, as Rav Chista did with Mari Bar Isik, because he was considered to be more powerful. Good. Mishnah. Hamafke peros eitz chavero, hareze yotzi lo chasronos. Well, so now becomes a very interesting case. So let's say I deposit produce with Reuven. They will say, now there's an understanding over here that whenever you have produce, there's an element of spoilage. So therefore, if I give X amount of produce to Reuven, obviously Reuven can't be expected to give me back the same exact amount, because that doesn't take into account any level of spoilage. So our Mishnah over here discusses this concept of spoilage. So Amafke peros itzo chavero, hare ze yotzi lo chasronos. So therefore, if you deposit produce with someone, the custodian has the ability to return to you the amount minus any we'll call it normative loss, chasronos. So now the Mishnah goes through what are considered to be the normal percentages for loss. L'chitim ula orez, so for wheat. Orez is, we often, it's interesting, we normally translate orez as rice. In this context, it's actually translated as millet. Tisha chatzi kabin l'kor, 9.5 kabin for every kor. So I'll say, just to distill it down, 2.5%. There's considered to be a 2.5% spoilage rate for millet and for wheat. Next, the se'orin l'dochon, so again, that's barley. Dochon is another type of millet. Tisha kabin l'kor, 5%. 5% lekusmin ula zera pishtan. Kusmin is spelt. Zera pishtan is flax seed. Shlosh se'in lekor. 10%. Hakol lefi amida v'hakol lefi hazman. So it says, obviously, these are subjective amounts. And interestingly enough, everything will be dependent ultimately on the amount. The amount, in other words, I will say, the spoilage amount or loss amount is calculated on a per core basis. So in other words, it's 2.5% of every core, 5% of every core, 10% of every core for the respective food items mentioned in the Mishnah. And lefi hazman, these percentages of spoilage are yearly amounts. So obviously, the more kurim that you go ahead and you deposit with the shomer, and the longer the duration. So again, everything goes up proportionally. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, I don't understand. The chima ichbas lahen la'achbarin. So he says, interesting. He says, what do the mice care how much produce is there? V'alo ochlos bein maharbe bein mikima. In other words, they both say, Rabbi Yochanan argues on this, and he says, I don't understand why it's the percentage per core. It should just be a percentage, just like a stam, a percentage of a core, and that's it. Because in other words, Rabbi Yochanan says the mice eat the same amount regardless of the amount of produce, and therefore bein meharbe bein mekima eino yotzi lo chasronos ela lekor echad bilvad. It's interesting. Rabbi Yochanan says that the spoilage or loss amount is only calculated based on one core of produce. Because we assume that the mice will always eat, 2.5% of a core of wheat, and 5% of a core of barley, and 10% of the core of the flax seed. And it doesn't make a difference how many kurim you have there. So it's interesting. So Rabbi Yochanan's spoilage or loss amount is independent actually of the entire amount that's deposited, as long as there's at least a core. Very interesting. Rabbi Huda says, "Em ha'isa mido en ruba, eino motzi lo chasronos v'pnei shemosiros." So Rabbi Huda says something very interesting. Rabbi Huda says, if I deposited with Reuven a large amount of produce, then we do not calculate out the loss for spoilage. Why? Because whatever is lost, whatever would have been lost through spoilage, is more than compensated through the expansion of the produce. Now, we'll say what that expansion is. So we're going to see in the Gemara, but I'll just say this now because Rashi points out already, is the assumption is like this. Produce is usually put away at the end of the summer after it's had an opportunity to dry in the field. Now, the assumption is if the custodian, if the shomer is holding on to the produce for an expanded amount of time, then it's going through the rainy season. In the rainy season, there's moisture that even gets into the silos, and the produce expands as a result of the moisture. So therefore, again, what Rabbi Yehuda posits is that if I deposit enough produce with the shomer, so spoilage amounts are offset by expansion of the produce because of moisture. Again, we're going to see in the Gemara how much produce this applies to, but that's Rabbi Yehuda's logic. Let's go by this. The Gemara says, Orez to the chaser. I forgot to take a cup of water. Coming right back. All right, I'm sorry. That was incredibly unprofessional. My apologies for that. Okay. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shakol Nieh B'dvaro. So the Gemara says as follows. Oraz Tuvachaser. So remember again, the Mishnah says that the spoilage amount for millet, for Oraz, is 2.5%. The Gemara says that's not true. We know that the spoilage percentage for millet is much more. So apparently there's peeled millet and unpeeled millet. So apparently, again, peeled millet, so Rashi says over here, apparently peeled millet and unpeeled millet experience spoilage at different paces. Fine. Lekusmin ulazara pishtan gimelsin. So we'll say, so next, again, remember we had spelt and flaxseed. So spelt and flaxseed ultimately was at 10%. Amrabi Yochanan, zera pishtan begivulin shanu. When we talk about flaxseed, we're talking about flaxseed in its husk. Taina Mechabraisa that supports this. Lekusmin ulazara pishtan begivulin, for spelt and for flaxseeds that are in their husk. Ula orez she'eno kalof, or for millet that is not peeled, right, that is not peeled. Shlosha si'in lekor. So that experiences spoilage at a 10% rate per core. Okay. Hakolafi amida. Tana kein lechol kor v'char v'chein lechol shana v'shana. So remember again, the Tanakhama holds that these spoilage percentages are the percentage per core of produce and per year. So that's the spoilage amounts. Rabbi Yochanan disagreed. Rabbi Yochanan Ben-Uri said no. The spoilage amounts are only calculated based on one core. Because what does it matter? The mice will consume the same amount whether you go ahead and have a lot of produce or don't have a lot of produce. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Amru Rabbi Yochanan, Amru Lod Rabbi Yochanan, Harbe Ovdos Mehen, Harbe Mispazros Mehen. If they say Rabbi Yochanan, I don't understand, it's not true. We see that there's more spoilage the greater the amount. So Tanya Ben Tarmur, when is this so? Bish She'irvan Imperosav. Sarah said, this is interesting. When is this so? When ultimately, again, I mix my own produce into the produce that I was watching. In other words, when do we say that halacha lemaisa, you have to go ahead and subtract out spoilage amounts? You're about to say, here's what's interesting about this conversation. I'm depositing produce with Reuven. And now what the Mishnah tells me is that when Reuven goes ahead and gives me back my produce, he's almost allowed to subtract out some spoilage amount. So the Gemara says, when is this true? This is true when Reuven is storing my produce with his produce, and kind of everything gets mixed out together. Now he has to give me back my produce. So he's able to give me back what I deposited with him, minus a percentage allocated to spoilage. So the Gemara says that's only true when all of our stuff is mixed together. However, let's say I deposited my produce with Reuven, and Reuven dedicated a quarter of his storehouse and he put my produce there. So then Reuven has the ability to say, listen, Silber, you gave me your produce, I put your produce in the corner, it's right there. I didn't touch it, I watched it, it's there. Whatever is there, and leave me alone. I don't have to supplement or do anything. But even if Reuven mixed my produce with his produce, so what? So just say, let Reuven do the math. How much Reuven did you use, right? How much of your own produce did you use? And you could back out and see how much is mine. So the Gemara says, "Mistapek man." No, because The Gemara says, even if Reuven's produce is mixed with my produce, so let Reuven figure out how much is his produce and how much is mine, and just return me my produce as is. To which the Gemara says, "Mistapek man." No, the case is where my produce is mixed with Reuven's produce, and Reuven is consuming from that mixture. Again, he's allowed to because his produce is in there. I v'lech say kame estapik. Okay, so Reuven, so just figure out how much did you consume. To which the Gemara says the lo yodi kame estapik. The case is where Reuven doesn't know. He didn't keep clear records, and therefore he doesn't know how much he actually consumed. So in a case like that, we look at how much I deposited with Reuven, and then I can subtract. Reuven can subtract off what is considered to be the percentage for normal spoilage and loss. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says, remember, Rabbi Yehuda's halacha was like this: if I deposited a lot of produce with Reuven, then ultimately, again, the loss from spoilage is offset by the expansion of the produce through the moisture. So the Gemara says, "Kama mida meruba." How much is a lot? How much produce do I have to be depositing with Reuven in order for this? In order for the expansion caused by moisture to offset the loss caused by spoilage. So the Gemara says, "Amra Barachan Amra Yochanan Asara Kurin, 10 Kurin." So if I deposit 10 kur or more with Reuven, essentially the expansion of the produce through the moisture offsets any loss because of spoilage. But say first wide line, Price supports this as well. Kama mida meruba, how much is a lot? So asar kurin, 10 kur. Tani Tanakam Edram Nachman, when is this so? Shemada lo mitoch grano, vehechsir lo mitoch grano. So I will say, furthermore, when is this so? This is so if I measured out the produce. I will say, what the Gemara is going to point out over something very interesting, which is that halacha l'maisa, there were two different types of like measuring utensils that were used. I guess what we would call is like, there's like commercial measuring utensils, which you would use in a granary. And then there's personal measuring utensils, which are used in the house. And often, again, the granary ones are larger. And I should say the commercial ones are larger. The granary ones are larger. And the home ones are smaller. So the Gemara says like this. So Rav Nachman, Tana Kamed Rav Nachman, when is this so? Shemadad lo mitoch grono. V'hichsir lo mitoch grono. Where we're using the same exact measuring utensils, both when I give him the produce, when I deposit it with Reuven, and when Reuven gives it back to me. Aval, madal lo mitoch grano. But if I gave the produce to Reuven using a commercial, you know, a granary measuring utensil, v'hechsir lo mitoch beso, and Reuven gives me back my produce using household utensils, eino yotzi lo chasronos. In that case, Reuven does not have the ability to subtract any type of loss for spoilage. Why? Bipnei shemosiros. Ultimately, again, because halacha lemaisa, the utensils, that commercial utensils, are larger than household utensils. Fine. So the Gemara says as follows. Amalei v'chibushuf taniya skin. That's obvious. Diyavi b'kaili rabba v'shachli b'kaili zuta. Of course, are we talking about fools over here who go ahead and give something in a large utensil and get it back in a small utensil? Dilma b'imos ha-goren kamrit. Also, maybe we're talking about, again, abosai, in the imos ha-goren. What does that mean? B'medran, when is this so? Shemadol b'imos ha-goren v'chzol b'imos ha-goren. Supposed to listen to this. So I would have thought, when is this true? When, let's say, I'm depositing the produce with Reuven during the imos ha-goren is the, not deposits, season, harvest season, sorry, harvest season, right? So in other words, no, not harvest season. It's the season where you put the produce into the granary. I don't know why I'm blanking on what the right word is. So that's imos ha-goren. V'hichsumos ha-goren. Ava amada lo imos ha-goren. But again, let's say I deposited it with Reuven at the time when stuff is put into storage. V'hichsul lo imos ha-gishamim. And Reuven's giving it back to me during the rainy season. So halacha lemaisa, he doesn't have to give me, there's no allocation for spoilage. Why? Because any loss of spoilage ultimately is offset by the expansion through the moisture because of the produce. Only the papa labaye imkein lifka kada. So also Rabbi Papa says to buy just something interesting. If you're right and this dynamic actually occurs, let's assume for a moment this dynamic actually occurs, halacha lemaisa, so then every single time that you have a barrel filled with wheat, by the time the rainy season comes around, the barrel should pop open because the grain swells up. To which the Gemara says, you're right, Tava Ovdu Pakakata. Yeah, that actually happened. One time that happened, where ultimately, again, the grain swelled and the barrel popped open. Ibaisim, with the other possibilities, the reason why that doesn't happen is Mishum Itzitza, because the grain is so tightly packed within the barrel, therefore the moisture does not go ahead and cause it to pop open. Okay, so we'll say, bottom line, the takeaway from this is that halacha lemaisa, whenever you deposit produce with someone, there is always a provision, or there's always an understanding that there is going to be some loss. Now, it's important just to frame these two cases, because we're not finished with the sugi yet, but just to frame it for our purposes. If I deposit something with Reuven, right? I deposit produce with Reuven, and Reuven gives me a corner of his silo, and he says, listen, I'm putting it here, that's it, I'm leaving it here, you come back and you get it when you need it. In that case, again, we just say, Arei Shalcha Lefanecha. When I show back up, Reuven says, listen, there, that's where you left it, take it, we're done. I'm happy to provide you space, but we're done. Shmira, but I'm done. What we're talking about over here, Bosei, is in these cases is where the produce either got mixed in, where my produce got mixed with Reuven's produce, or just maybe there wasn't a specific area that was allocated. So halacha lemaisa, what the Gemara says over here is that there's an understanding that there's spoilage, and therefore, again, the amount that I deposit with Reuven is not the exact amount I'm getting back. So the point of the Mishnah was to say the percent, these are the percentages, but obviously, as the Mishnah itself said, is going to be dependent on, could be dependent on so many things, depending on where you are, what type of produce, so on and so forth. What I will just mention is we're going to see that the halacha does reject the positions of Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri and Rabbi Huda. That essentially, again, we go ahead and we assume that there are percentages ultimately of loss, even if the produce was there with the shomer through the rainy season. In other words, we don't accept this premise that the expansion of the produce through moisture somehow offsets the loss. That's number one. And number two, we reject Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri, namely that the percentage of loss is the percentage per core. Unlike Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri, just says it's one core, the percentage of one core that represents the loss, we hold that it's a percentage of every core. Okay, beautiful. Let's go back there. Mishnah. Yotzi losha sosilayin. So we'll say, so continuing along this same topic, what about wine? I deposited wine with Reuven. So now the Mishnah says, we go ahead and we assume a loss of 1/6 of a lug for wine. So 1/6 of a lug for right, 1/6 of a lug is considered to be the loss for wine. Rashi is liyayin im hifkit etzlo yayin ve'irvu im yeinu akan kana balash shusos. They're both saying that actually this is what's interesting over here is that halacha lemaisa. We're actually assuming that what's happening over here is absorption, that the barrels absorb some amount of wine. So a sixth of a log is considered to be the rate of absorption. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Chomer, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, not a sixth, but a fifth. Okay. Yotzi lo shlosha lugin shemen lema. So what's shemen lemea? So we'll say, now listen to this. Furthermore, oil. So that's wine. What about oil? So oil, the Mishnah says, is you take out, you assume a rate of loss, it's not really spoilage. We're going to see here, really, it's loss of 3 lugin per 100. So for every 100 lug, we assume 3 lug of loss. Why? What's the 3? So lugu mechza shmarim. First of all, because 1.5 lugin, we're going to assume are the olive dregs. Lugu mechza bala. And then there's an absorption of the olive into the barrels of another 1.5 lugin. So therefore, that represents essentially a loss of, what we'll call a loss of 3 lugin of oil for every 100 lug. Okay. Imhaya shemen mezukak eni yotzi lo shmarim. So we'll say, so this is actually interesting. So halacha lemaisa, if somebody will see, actually, look, no, Rashi's not here yet. Okay, so fine. Imhaya shemen mezukak. So we'll say, let's say again, it was pure oil. Now, pure oil means oil without dregs, refined oil. Eni yotzi lo shmarim. So then obviously, again, the custodian can subtract off a lug and a half for dregs. Imhayu kan kanim yishanim. Similarly, again, so we'll say, all that's saying is if halacha lemaisa, I deposited refined oil, strained oil, so there are no dregs, then obviously the shomer can't deduct a lug and a half when he returns to me the oil for dregs. That's number one. Second example is, similarly, again, if the barrels were old, they will say, now the chapa of old barrels is they've already reached the point of barrel saturation, and therefore they can't absorb any more oil. Therefore, again, you wouldn't subtract off the 1.5 lugin for absorption. Okay, Rabbi Huda says, "Af amocha shem zuk lachafero koymas hashana is mekabel of lug umechta shmar lemea." So, what Rabbi Huda says that even if you sell refined oil to your friend throughout the entire year, the purchaser always accepts that there's going to be 1.5 lug of dregs for every 100 lug. So, we'll say this is an interesting halacha. So, whenever you buy oil, even if you are absolutely buying, let's say, refined oil or what's the right word? Yeah, Shem is like a refined oil, right? Regular oil, clean oil, so to speak, strained oil. So there's an understanding that even in that, there is going to be 1.5 lug of dregs per 100 lugin of oil. Okay, so the Gemara of low plea, so the Gemara is going back to the first point over here, that if I deposit wine with Ruvain, so again, there's a spoilage, or really better stated, an absorption amount. So this is machlokes. So the Tanakhama said, it's 1/6 of a log. Rabbi Huda said, ultimately, again, it's a fifth. So the Gemara says, they're not arguing. The Gemara says, mar kiasre u mar kiasre. Is actually just reflecting different societal norms. Different norms applied in different places. Be'asrei demar, chafu bekira, v'lo mayitz tvei. In right, it sounds like, again, in Rabbi Huda's locale, so they would coat the barrels, the interior barrels, with wax. Therefore, again, it wouldn't absorb a lot. So the Gemara says, be'asrei demar, chafu bekufra, u'mayitz tvei. And apparently for the Tanakama's place, the Tanakama's locale, they coated the barrels with pitch, and therefore the barrels absorbed more. Okay, Ibai, so the other possibility is Mishum Gargishta. The other possibility is it's not about what you coat the barrel with, but maybe the type of clay that the barrel is made out of. So the Gemara says, Ha Maitze Tvei, V'ha Lo Maitze Tvei. So apparently, again, different types of clay have different, are porous in different ways. So some clay barrels absorb more, some clay barrels absorb less. Okay. Ba'asrei d'Rav Yehuda, Ramu Arboim V'timni Kuza B'dana. So we'll listen to this interesting case here. In the city of Rav Yehuda, so ultimately, again, you are able to buy 48, right? Arboim V'timni, 48 kuz of wine, right? Bedana. Fine. Rashi says over here, Ramu arbotin v'timni kuzi bedana, mida kitana haisa bimkomo, sha arbotin mishwana marlin asachavis. Fine. So the Gemara says, azel dana b'shisa zuzi. So what happened? Rashi says, azel dana b'shisa zuzi, b'shisa zuzim hayinim keres b'yachad b'mos habatzir. So ultimately, again, for six zuz, right? You could go ahead and sell the dana for six zuz, okay? Paris Rabbi Huda, shisa bezuza. So Rabbi Huda went ahead and sold every six for a zuz. Amud Beis, dal, so I'll both say 40b. Dal tulsin vishisa bishisa. So ultimately, again, so what happened? So therefore, Dal Tulsin Vishisa Bishisa. Rashi is over here. Kuzi Bishisa Zuzi. Shekana Pasha Tracer. So ultimately, again, he's left with, after he sells this off, he's left with 12. Parshule Tracer. Dal Tumnis Shisusi. Pashlu Arba. So I'll say then he was left with 12. Take out from there, ultimately 8. And Rashi says over here, why are you taking out 8? Shamem Chesha Derechu Lechaser Biblias Akankan. So after 12, he's taking out 8 because that's the absorption rate. Pashlu Arba. And he's left ultimately with 4. Says Yimar, I Vamar Shmuel Hamistakir Ayistakir Yosa Ashusos. So I'll say Yimar just points out that this seems to be a very low profit margin. So the Gemara says, no, Ika. What the Gemara is saying over here is talking about the halachos of Ono. You can't overcharge by more than a sixth. What it sounds like is you're entitled to at least make a sixth of profit, but it seems that Rabbi Huda is making even less than that. Ika gulfi v'shemaryo. So we'll say, no, there's ultimately the gulfi and the shemaryo. Rashi says over here, gulfi o shemaryo. Rashi says, mistaker hu akankan vashmar shalakach bevavzus. So ultimately, I will say the Gemara says that there's still the value of the barrel and the dregs. Ihachi nafish lu tfei mishzus. If that's the case, Rabbi Huda made more than a sixth. To which the Gemara says, ika tarchei v'dami bechanaisa. No, because there's still the amount of money that you have to pay for labor, as well as the amount of money that you have to pay for someone to open up the barrel. Okay. Im hayashem mezukak ini yotzi lo shmarim. So we'll say, so remember again, if halacha lemaisa, I was selling to Ruvain, or I was giving. Yeah, these cases could be sale cases, and these could also be custodial cases where I'm depositing and then want something back. If it was clear oil, then ultimately, again, you can't go ahead and remove some of the amount of the oil, claiming that it's dregs. So the Gemara says, "Vaha efshar delo bala." Aye, but it's impossible that halacha lemaisa, that the barrel didn't absorb some of the oil. Amrav Nachman b'mezufafin shanu. We're talking about barrels that are totally coated on the interior. Abaye Amrabi Abaye says afilu tema shelo b'mezufafin kevon de ton. And I will say now sometimes sometimes halacha lemaisa, it's interesting actually, that it does reach a point of complete saturation, where the barrel itself, the sides of the barrel are so full with whatever they've absorbed, that halacha lemaisa they can't absorb anymore. Okay, Rabbi Huda Omer, Af amocher shemen mezukach l'chavero koimas ashon arezim mekabal of logo mechteshmar lemea. So we'll say, it's an interesting case over here. An interesting case. Rabbi Huda says that halacha lemaisa, whenever you go ahead and you sell shemen mezukach, so shemen mezukach ultimately is clear oil. So there's always an understanding that even if you're selling clear oil, there's always going to be some amount of dregs mixed into that oil. Omer Abaye. So we'll say, let's analyze this. So again, the amount is 1.5 log for every 100 logs. So 1.5 logs of 1.5 logs of dregs for every 100 logs of lugin of oil sold. So Omer Abaye. This is interesting. So we'll say, so I just want to point out that this is an interesting machlokes over here, right? So remember again, Rabbi Huda says, "Af amocher shem zuk lechavero kamos hashana harizim mekabel of logu mechteshmar lemeya." So it's Rabbi Huda in the Mishnah who says that even if I'm selling to Reuven clear oil, strained oil, pure oil, so it's understood that even with that, there's still 1.5 log of dregs for every 100 logs of oil. Yet the Rabbanan, the Chachamim, seem to disagree with this concept and say, no, if you're selling strained oil, then halacha lemaisa, the buyer has the right to go ahead and get strained oil. All right, so let's analyze this a little bit. In other words, according to the Chachamim, if you contract to sell clear or strained oil, pure oil, then there is no allocation ultimately for the dregs. So the Gemara says, "Amar Abaye, kishatim silam adiv Rabbi Yehuda, motor la'arev shmarim, l'adiv rechacham asa la'arev shmarim." So it's very interesting. Abaye says, what comes out over here is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you're selling oil, it is permitted to mix in dregs. So that the dregs ultimately help to make the volume of the oil you are selling. According to the Chachamim, you are not allowed to do that. According to the Chachamim, you can't go ahead and mix in dregs. So the Marsal Dira Yehuda Mortala Arif Shmarim, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're allowed to mix in dregs. Vahainu Taima Dimekabel. And that's why ultimately again, that's why Rabbi Yehuda says that whenever you sell oil, it's understood that mixed in there is going to be 1.5 lugin for every 100 of lug, right? 1.5 lugin of dregs for every 100 lugin of oil. Because remember again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the seller could say to the buyer, look, I have every right to proactively mix in dregs. So this is actually very interesting, we'll say. So what this is saying is like this. According to Rabbi Yehuda, if I agree to sell Reuven, let's say 100 lugin of oil, so it's understood that in fact what Reuven's really getting is 98.5 lugin of oil. Because there's an understanding that 1.5 lugin per is going to be dregs of every 100 lugin of wine. So Rabbi Yehuda holds that we must hold that halacha lemaisa, the seller is actually permitted to go ahead and actively mix in dregs in order to kind of get to the amount that is being sold. And ultimately, again, Rabbi Yehuda says that halacha lemaisa, even if he didn't mix in dregs, essentially for every 100 lugin of oil that are sold, he only has to deliver 98.5 lugin, because halacha lemaisa, there's always an assumption that there's 1.5 lugin of dregs. And even if it's not there, the seller could say to the buyer, it's understood that when you're buying 100 lug of wine, of oil, you're only getting 98.5 lugin. So again, why can't the seller say, listen, you know what, had the dregs been mixed in, okay, right, I would have dealt with it. So again, had you mixed in the dregs ultimately again, then fine, I would have been able to sell everything. But if I'm just going to get dregs separately, what am I going to do with them? To which the Gemara says, no, Balabayis askinon, denechale betzila. Maybe we're talking about a balabais. So a homeowner, a balabais. So when someone is buying it for, let's say, their own personal use, I would rather go ahead and know that I'm getting less, but getting a finer quality that I could immediately use, rather than getting something with dregs mixed in. But why can't the purchaser say to the buyer, since you didn't mix in the dregs, obviously you forgave that 1.5 lugin of dregs that could be mixed in? To which the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda l'tamei de les le mechila. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of mechila. Interesting. Rabbi says this, what a terrible approach to life. Man, it might work in halacha, but again, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of mechila. What does this mean? This nan, machalo asat samer, lo machalo asat bakar. Sorry, tzemed, lo machalo asat bakar. Supposed to listen to this. If I sell Reuven the yoke of my cow, the sale of the yoke doesn't automatically include the sale of the cow. Machalo asat bakar, lo machalo asat samer. Similarly, again, if I sell the cow, then it doesn't automatically mean that I'm selling the yoke. So Rabbi Yehuda says, hadamim modiyin. So Rabbi Yehuda says you can tell everything ultimately again from the amount of money spent on the sale. Kate, sudden, watch this. So I say to Reuven, or again, I'm switching it around over here, but okay. Reuven says to me, I say to Reuven, right, sell me your yoke for 200 zuz. Now, Bosai, hadavri yodua she'enatzav ma'asayim zuz. Everyone knows that a yoke does not cost 200 zuz. Therefore, Abosai, interestingly enough, so what does that mean? So again, this is actually a very interesting case. So let's say I go over to Reuven and I say, Reuven, I want to buy the yoke. And Reuven says, okay, here's the yoke for 200 zuz. So Abosai, so let's say for argument's sake, a yoke only costs 50 zuz. But let's say the cow is 150 zuz. Now Reuven's asking me 200 zuz for the yoke. So what do you do with this? This is one of two ways of looking at this transaction. Either Reuven's going to go ahead and Reuven's going to sell me. I know that I keep on mixing up the names. I'm sorry. Let's keep this simple. Reuven is willing to sell me the yoke for 200 zuz. Okay? I know that a yoke is not worth 200 zuz. Let's say a yoke is worth 150 zuz, but a cow is worth 150 zuz. So now when I give Reuven 200 zuz, there's one of two ways of looking at this. Either A, I'm paying him for the yoke and I'm mochel on the rest of the money. It's like a gift. Or no, it's understood that really what I'm contracting to him buying is both the truth is, let me do this once more. Let me flip it, because it's easier to talk about this from the perspective of the seller. Reuven is selling the yoke. Reuven is selling the yoke ultimately again for 200 zuz. So we'll say no one pays 200 zuz for a yoke. So the shaila is Reuven including the cow in that sale? Or perhaps again, Reuven is just going and asking for an exorbitant amount of money. And if I pay it, I'm ochel on the money. Rabbi Yehuda says no. Based on the money tendered, that's how we know what happened in the transaction. Why? Because Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of mechila. He doesn't hold of mechila. So the Gemara says, the Chum says, ein hadamim raya. The Chum say, no, the amount of money paid is not a raya. We'll say, interestingly enough, because halacha l'maisa Rashi says over here, afagav lo shava kuli hai, achuli achli lokeach ze yosra hadamim. So we'll say, it's interesting. The Chachamim say, everyone knows that a yoke is not worth 200 zuz, but when I pay 200 zuz, I'm buying the yoke and I'm mochel on the rest. So what do you see from here? You see from here that halacha lemaisa, Rabbi Yehuda is not mochel. He doesn't believe in mechila in financial matters, and the chachamim do. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, if I pay 200 zuz for a yoke, it's understood that what we're contracting for is a yoke plus a cow. According to the chachamim, I'm getting a very expensive yoke and I'm mochel the rest of the money. Circling this all the way back, that's why Rabbi Yehuda holds that halacha lemaisa, if I go ahead and I purchase oil, and there are no dregs in the oil, don't take that to mean that the seller is mochel on his entitlement to include a lug and a half of dregs in the oil, because Rabbi Yehuda does not hold of mechila. Okay, the divrei chacham, according to the chachamim, asr la'ariv shmarim. You're not allowed to mix in dregs, olive dregs. V'hainu time lo mekabel. Ultimately, again, the reason is ultimately because not mekabel. The amrle ibayis la'ruve mi hava sharilach. Because ultimately, again, the purchaser says to the seller, if you wanted to mix in dregs, would you be permitted to? The answer is no. Hashtanami lo mekabelino. So too, I'm not mekabel. The 100 lug minus 1.5 lugin of oil, of dregs. So it's v'hainu taima delo mekabel, do amar lei midelo araftali, because again, according to the Chachamim, I can say like this, the purchaser can say to the seller, since you did not include the dregs, you didn't mix in the dregs, therefore achuli achlisli, therefore clearly you are mochel on that 1.5 lugin of dregs. L'div Rabbi Yehuda asr la'ariv shmarim, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're not allowed to mix in, dregs. V'hainu taima de mekabel, to Amar Lei Ibay La Aruve Lo Shari Lecha La Aruve. I'm sorry, Lo Shari Lecha La Aruve Lecha La Kabuli Lo Mekabelas. So ultimately, again, Rabbi said, according to this version, Rabbi Yehuda also holds that you're not allowed to mix in the dregs, and therefore Halacha LeMaisa, the purchaser could say you would have no right to go ahead and mix it, and therefore I don't have to be Mekabel it. So the Gemara says Zabin V'Zabin Tagra Ikri. After all, is someone who goes ahead and sells something but doesn't make a profit from it, is such a person considered to be a businessman? So look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says Kabuli Nami Lo Mekabelas. So remember, it's actually interesting over here. The profit often that a merchant would make would actually be from the dregs. Because what you're doing is, for every 100 lug of oil that you're able to sell, you really only have to deliver 98 and a half lugin. So we'll say, so therefore, the inability to go ahead and include that in some way essentially renders this a non-profitable initiative. So Rashi says, Zabin v'zabin tagra ikri b'tmiya mashalu lemar l'shota lakach b'damim v'chazir v'machar b'lo schar v'tikri tagar. So I will say, can you call someone who doesn't turn a profit on a business deal a businessman? Of course not. It's a great line. Zabin v'zabin tagra. So in other words, somebody who literally just buys something and sells it for the same exact amount of money. Tagra ikri. Is such a person called a merchant? As Rabbi say, that halacha l'maisa, the only time that a person is called a businessman is if he turns a profit on the merchandise that he's selling. If he's not turning a profit, then halacha l'maisa, he's not doing anything. Really incredible. So the Gemara says, Tana, echad halokeach ve'echad hamafkid lipikatim. So now we're transitioning here. Same concept. I'm going to show you the Rambam in just a few moments. We'll pull this all together in just a little bit. Another example of this. Let's try to get to the Mishnah. So Tana Echad Olkeach VeEchad HaMafkid LePekatim. So both the purchaser as well as one who deposits an object are responsible, literally again, for pekatim. Now, what does this mean? Rashi says over here, psoles hagar'in natsaf al pnei Hashem. So apparently, when you let oil sit for a prolonged amount of time, there is some schmutz that accumulates on the top. So the Gemara says, my lipekatim, what does this mean? Ilema ki hechi delokeach lo mekabel pekatim, mafkid nami lo mekabel pekatim. So we'll say, maybe we'll say in the same way that a purchaser does not accept the schmutz on the top. The schmutz on the top is not part of what he is purchasing. So too, again, the mafkid nami, the mafkid is also doesn't accept it. Velema le piktach ma'i avid lehu. So we'll say, so I understand. If that's what does that mean? That when I give, if I'm watching Ruvain's oil, and the schmutz accumulates on top, that I'm responsible now for what? I'm responsible to add in more oil. In other words, why can't I just say to Ruvain, listen, you deposited me the oil, the schmutz accumulated on it. It's not my problem. It's your oil. Elo ki hechi demafkid mekabel pekatim lo keach nai mekabel pekatim. Rather, I'll say what it means is like this. It's actually quite fascinating. In the same way that when you purchase oil, it is very common that you are going to get some schmutz on top, and that is part of the oil that you're getting. In other words, we'll say the common denominator amongst these conversations over here is that halacha l'maisa, whenever you buy something, there's an understanding that there is some level of impurity that is mixed in to that particular item. So up until now, I was talking about dregs. Now, olive, apparently oil have something else, which is the schmutz on top. So in the same way that when you purchase oil, you recognize that some of the volume of the product that you are purchasing is the schmutz, just like you recognize that some of the volume of what you're purchasing is the dregs, so some of what you're purchasing is the schmutz. So the Gemara says, so too again, so when you purchase that's true, and also again, mafkid nami mekal pekatim. So we'll say, so again, if I deposit my oil with Ruvain, and then I want my oil back, it's understood that some of the oil I'm getting back, some of that volume, is going to be made up by the schmutz that accumulated on the top. Umi mekabel, lokeach pekatim. Is that true that when I purchase oil, I accept that there's some level of schmutz on the top? Is that true? So the Gemara says, "Vatanya." We learned, "Rabbi Yehuda Omer lo Amru Shemen Achor Ela Lemocher Bilvad." So we'll say, ultimately, again, they only said Shemen Achor. Now Rashi says over here, "Lo Amru Shemen Achor Ela Lemocher." Lo Amru Hef said Achiras Hashemen Ela Lemocher. So we'll say, ultimately, it's the seller. It's the seller who has to. Shemen Achor literally means like cloudy oil, gross oil. You know, meaning the impurities go to the mocher. Shehare Lokeach Mekabel Alav Lug Umechza Shmarim Belo Pekatim. So Rabbi said, listen to this. The Braisa says over here, if I'm purchasing oil, I already accept upon myself 1.5 lugin of dregs. That's it. That's the level of impurities that I'm willing to accept. Nothing more than that, including the shmutz that accumulates on top. Lokasha hadi yoyev lezuze b'tishrei v'kashakol minei b'nisan kimida de tishrei. So we'll say it's not a contradiction, not a kasha. Rather, again, it's two different cases. One is where you're paying for the oil in tishrei, but you don't end up taking it until nisan, in accordance with the measures of Tishrei. We'll see them in just a moment. The second case is where you're paying for oil in Nisan, and you're taking possession of it, you're getting it in Nisan, in accordance with the measures of Nisan. What is this? Take a look at Rashi, Abosai. It's very interesting. Rashi says, Kimida de Tishrei, Kishar Hadamim Shal Tishrei Shehu Bezol. So Abosai, so remember again, when you buy oil in Tishrei, oil is cheaper. Oil is cheaper. So the Gemara says, Ustam shmanim achurim nekibal apakatim. When you buy oil in Tishrei, so you are essentially getting an inferior product. So when you get, so by the way, it's also reflected in a lower price. So you're going to get a lower price, an inferior product, and that's when you accept the shmutz in it as well. As opposed to, Rashi says over here, had the shakal minei benisan kishir shal nisan, biyoker de derech kol hashmanim lios mizukakim benisan. When you purchase oil in Nisan, you're purchasing again a higher grade product. And when you're purchasing a higher grade product, again, you're getting it without the shmutz. Incredible. So we'll say very quickly, just in the last minute that we have. So halacha lemaisa, the way the Rambam paskins is like this. The Rambam says this is in Hilchos Mechira, Perek Yud Ches, halacha Ches. Well, it's Ches Tes Yud. Aser la'ariv shmarim bein b'yayin bein b'shemim v'afilu kol shu v'afilu shmarim shal emesh b'shmarim shal yom aser avalim ira yayin mikli al kli nosi shmarim v'socho. So also, it's very interesting. Halach l'mayin said there is an automatic assumption that when you're purchasing oil, you're going to get some level of dregs. That's the assumption. What you can't do, Abosai, is the seller can't actively mix in dregs in order to have to give the purchaser less. Similarly, again, Rambam says, "Hamotzi lechavero shemen mezukok, eino mekabel shmarim." So we'll say, if you contract to purchase clear oil, then again, there is no allowance for dregs. Macherlo shemen stam. What happens if you just stam contract to buy oil, just regular oil, right? Without saying shemen mezukok. Shemen mezukok both means like strained oil. So if you purchase strained oil, that is oil without dregs. Let's say you just purchase oil stam, and you don't clarify dregs or not, then what's the halacha? Mekaba lugu mechza shmarim l'chol me'at lug. So we'll say in that case, you essentially accept 1.5 lugin of dregs for every 100 lug of oil. Mekaba b'shar shmarim shemen achar al good, fine. So we'll say, so again, then the Rambam goes in and he makes this distinction between buying wine in Tishrei versus buying wine in Nisan, but we're going to leave that alone. So we'll say, then the Rambam goes on, by the way, in the next halacha, you don't have time for it now, but the Rambam goes through all of the produce, the first Mishnah we had, Hamocher Chitim, Saorim, Adoshim, Te'enim, and about say halacha lemaisa, the Rambam accepts the premise that whenever you're purchasing, now again, this is in the context of purchasing, whenever you're purchasing, understand that there is always some level of impurities mixed into whatever it is that you're purchasing. So that's how the Rambam paskins. I'm sorry, I know we went quickly, but I wanted to at least start the week with trying to maintain on schedule, as inevitably we will Emir Hashem, and I say Emir Hashem because we always fall behind for good reasons. I will say tremendous pilot. I apologize. I know that certain parts I probably flew through it a little bit. I apologize for that. But Emir Hashem, hopefully you got the yisodos of the daf. Looking forward to seeing everyone Emir Hashem on Rosh Chodesh on Tuesday morning. B'sha'a tova u'metzlachos. Wishing everyone a wonderful day. Kol tov chevra.